Yeah, great. But the first time that I stand before you as a fellow parishioner, someone from the pews, as it were, and so I'm happy about that. I think, or probably, as many of you know me, Remy's dad is probably the most apt description of who I am to you. But it has been a lovely experience getting to know you all, getting to know this community more over the last year or so that we've been hanging along for your journey. I realize most of you probably don't know me super well, and I don't want to talk about myself when you got a couple texts like this to go over today, but I thought a couple pieces of context of who am I and how did I come to kind of be within our diocesan life and in the way that I am might be helpful. So I grew up in New Brunswick on the East Coast in an evangelical Wesleyan church. And then I went to college in Edmonton in a Baptist church, Baptist College, and did my postgrad studies in New Zealand kind of between 2010 and received my PhD in 2015 in theology. We moved to the island 2017, and I convinced Bishop Logan to give me a three-month contract in the Synod office. And then, lo and behold, a few years later, I become the executive director and executive officer of the diocese. So, Remy was born at the height of the COVID lockdown restrictions in June of 2020, so fully a COVID baby. And for most of the years in between then and now, we've gone to the Abbey Church, and then we had a period of kind of exploring polyamorous church relationships, which I recommend you do from time to time. But and Remy clearly let me know, and I think let all of us know, that St. Philip was the place for her. So this is kind of where we're happy to be. It's interesting, though. Most of the friends that I went through college with, and it was a Baptist college, and most of some of the folks too, I went through postgrad studies, no longer really participate in Christianity, in religion, in the way that we used to. And a lot of them have some kind of spiritual trauma to kind of go along with their journey. And I think it's more common now here probably for people to look for meaning and peace and in nature than it is in religious communities. In many ways, religion in our midst has become obsolete. At least that's the argument of the new book by Christian Smith. And I do think there is an opportunity, though, for many in our parishes and our places to be honest, places of honest engagement with the world that we find, and I think the world that we intend to serve. So it is an interesting time to be joining St. Philip and the community, right? With the conversations that are underway about the future, the communal discernment that's taking place, and the possibilities about a co-location in a different building. It is, yeah, it's an interesting time to join in, and I'm happy for it. I admit that I am something of a church nerd. I don't think you get to have the role that I have without enjoying the kind of process and of church life together. And I hold some deep convictions about that, about how we as a people of faith govern ourselves and guide our own processes. How we meet, how we discern, how we decide are all deep structural elements about how our faith is lived out. So what we do in process and policy either facilitates or hampers the faith of the faithful. And this is partly how I understand my ministry in the diocese. What we often do in our office ought to enable and support working out of faith in parishes. So it was fun for me then to come to the AGM about a month ago and kind of see what it's like for this community to think about the next year and plan ahead. A couple things from that meeting, that AGM, stood out to me and I wanted to mention to you. One of them is a question that I think we often hear across the diocese. I've heard it a number of times in different versions, but basically something like, how do we do this work? How do we appeal to people in our society when the church has lost a lot of our credibility over time? And I'll return to this question a little bit and offer a couple thoughts related to the text, but the second thing that stuck out to me was a number of comments at the AGM from people about how this community has changed over time. What faith has looked like, what faithfulness has looked like, has shifted from time to time to time as we continue on our journey. And I think both of these are strong indicators of our journey of what comes next. So in today's reading, both Ezekiel and in the Gospel of John, we come face to face with death in different kinds, different ways. In Ezekiel, we have the valley of dry bones that are then reanimated through the prophet as the agent of God. And in the Gospel, we have the wet bones of Lazarus, fresh wet bones. And on the one hand, these are both beautiful and bizarre scenes about, which represent, for Ezekiel, which represents Israel in exile. And Ezekiel speaks life back into them so that they can remember that Yahweh is their God. And in this context, Israel is in exile. I don't know how long they've been in there, but long enough for their hope to be dissipated. They've lost the reality to see that the vision of the life that they had in the promise of God was gone. So the bones that held that hope seemed to be dead, and they did not have any real possibility to live into the story that was given to them through their ancestors. And in the Gospel, we have a story of Jesus' friend dying and the grief and the sorrow that comes with death, followed by the dramatic Lazarus come out and Lazarus being raised from the tomb. And I think this story, and like a lot of stories in our text, we become very used to them, and the kind of the drama of them kind of lessens over time, but it's quite a dramatic thing. There's a lot in these passages and a lot in this passage in the Gospel that we're not going to explore, but I think it's fascinating when you look at the big picture and where this comes in the lectionary, that we have just a couple weeks before Easter a resurrection teaser. So both readings have us facing death, both through the power of God's voice of life over death, and then something unexpected and new happens. So we have almost a test run encounter with the resurrection. We get to have a bit of a dress rehearsal almost before the big event of Easter comes. Now, I don't think this is like a quiz necessarily that's prepping us for the eventual test. But I think there is here an opportunity, a chance for us to try on that movement from death to life. To face death and its sorrow, its hopelessness, and trust that the voice of God calling and inviting us forward will bring new life. This is a very strong theme in these passages and throughout the biblical witness. Partly what it's inviting us here, though, too, is to really encounter the death part of it, you know? The hard, the dark, the smelly, the sad, the broken, the dry, and the dead. The stuff that is uncomfortable for most of us to face and sit with. As individuals and community, I think this is essential to sit with this before the new life is revealed. And I think there's something here for us as we look at how we dream and vision about what comes next. What are we being called to be faithful? And I think there's also something about how we might answer that other question that I mentioned about how do we appeal or resonate with folks in our community who might feel some sense of stirring or draw to explore meaning in a different way. For years now, I've thought that when we're trying to answer this question of how do we kind of appeal to folks in the community, what we don't want to do is fall into the trap of commodifying religion. We aren't packaging a product or offering a service. Instead, we're offering participation in a community who's within a story that's much bigger than ours. We are, in a lot of ways, a community on the road. And in the book that I mentioned, Why Religion Went Obsolete, Christian Smith cites, this is not a turn of just the steady decline over time that's happened since the 1960s. Instead, he's arguing for a distinction of a very different kind entirely, a disconnect between the needs of society and the offering of religion in general. So the things that people actually need, religion isn't offering anymore. This is a big disconnect, he's arguing. So in some ways, some interpretation of his book here is that maybe our habits of faith have become a little bit too nice almost, too comfortable to really answer the questions that people are living with. When younger people are looking around and we see these vast and growing divides between those who have wealth and those who have nothing, between the systems, you see these systems of society that are ignoring the least of these. And we see climate emergencies that are becoming more and more urgent. And those of us with kids, we're trying to raise kids who have hope, despite all the signs in society that things are getting worse and not better. And yet, what people are turning to is things that are not necessarily super healthy. We have isolating algorithms in our social media feeds presented to us at every turn, right? And we have AI advisors that are building new kinds of walls that keep people apart and isolated. So what people need, I believe, is a community that resonates. So this idea, this term resonance rather than relevance, I think is the thing that we're looking for. Relevance has a kind of fleeting nature to it, but resonance, I think, is deeply human. There's a sociologist, Helmut Rosa, who talks about resonance as this thing that humans need in the face of isolation. And it's four elements. I'll just go through them pretty quick. But I think they might be helpful for us as we journey towards what comes next for us. And I think there's also, they relate very well to the story of Lazarus. So the first element of resonance is affection. Resonance describes something that moves us, that touches us, that affects us in our soul, in our body. We have this experience, sometimes it really surprises us, but sometimes it's music, sometimes it's an idea, sometimes it's our life being witnessed or us witnessing someone else's life. And I think we see this in the gospel today. Jesus is deeply affected by the tears of Martha and Mary and their grief and suffering. And he is moved to join them in that place. There's something that deeply affected him. The second thing is self-efficacy. Resonance doesn't just happen to someone, but it involves self-action, self-participation. A meeting, a feeling with a choice. So it's not just that Jesus was moved by their tears, but he moved towards them. He made a choice to reach out and respond. The third element of resonance is transformation. An encounter changes things. We don't leave the same as we did before. Jesus calls Lazarus forth. And I don't think anyone who was there for that would have been the same afterwards. Not Lazarus, not Martha, nor the people who have been in the crowd witnessing that moment. And finally, the last element that Rosa names is uncontrollability. Resonance is not controlled or contrived, but necessarily involves a kind of unknown and unknowing risk. It comes as a gift or not at all. It isn't a recipe that can be followed to receive the result, but it involves something of hope, something of the unexpected happening. You can't necessarily just sing a song a certain way or preach a sermon just so and guarantee that it's going to land and resonate with someone in a way that moves them, that has all these elements. There's got to be a part, and there will always be a part, I think, especially as faithful witness, that it makes sense in their context, and the work of the Holy Spirit does the rest. So resonance involves affection, self-efficacy, transformation, and uncontrollability. Now, I don't know necessarily what we can take from that to make it more likely that what we do in our community, when we bring someone new into it, that it's going to resonate. But I think it involves honesty, it involves deep presence, attention, and to be in and with the complexity of the world and the suffering of the world and the sorrow of the world to the people and the ways that we are seeing that and finding it. So I think it is this ability to be present to and shape community around authentic engagement with the world that we find and the hard realities of the world that we find while caring for one another in tangible ways. These are the kind of things that I think will resonate. And I know many of you have experienced this kind of resonance here in this community. That voice of experience of how this community has been life-giving, how it's shaped you, has it changed over time, is vital as we step into the future. I think there are people in our community who want and need something like St. Philip's is offering. And there are those likely who feel like their bones have dried up and they forget the story that they were once called to. And likely others who have recently maybe put someone or something in their lives to rest and are looking for someone to join them in their sorrow related to that and see, join them in their grief and see what life might be produced next. I think the invitation to us in these stories is not to rush over the hard to get to the good, to sit with it, to go through the Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and really sink in to the hardship of those days. So we don't just rush to Easter. It is really only through encountering death and getting to feel its effects, the life-giving power of our God in our midst, that we can truly do more than we can ask or imagine. Amen.